take testimony today on Senate Bill 240 and SJR 1. And Dr. Jarvis and Simonton, please lead off and tell us about Senate Bill 240.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Senator Marcet, Richard Jarvis, for the record, Chancellor of the Oregon University System. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon on behalf of Senate Bill 240 and to inform you of the essential needs we have for support for deferred maintenance on our campuses. Why are we here today with a bill of this magnitude of $500 million of bonding authority? Well, our support for maintenance on our campuses has not increased substantially over the course of 12 years. It's taken us 12 years to get where we are today, and it'll frankly take us about a decade to get out of that. We've suffered a series of budget shocks and throughout the decade of the 90s, and during that time, we have chosen to support students rather than buildings and infrastructure, and we believe that was the right decision. As a result, we're now facing three very tough drivers. Our facilities and the systems that support them are aging, our enrollment continues to increase, and we're facing the pressure of reduced budgets. As a result, recognizing the realities of the next biennium, we're turning to a request for bonding authority to solve or to address this problem. We believe it's a very conservative bond proposal. It will have no fiscal impact in the next biennium, 03-05. It is of limited duration and is a fixed dollar amount. It sunsets after the bonds retire. With that, let me turn over to Bob Simonton, Director of Capital Construction, who will lead us through this beginning presentation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chancellor Jarvis. Chair Starr and Senator Marcet, for the record, I am Bob Simonton, Director of Capital Construction for the Oregon University System. I have a brief presentation about a very large problem called deferred maintenance. The problem is nationwide in scope, affecting both private and state institutions of higher education. Recent surveys estimate the impact to correct the problem to be over $50 billion nationally. So I will begin with an introduction of the Oregon University System and then identify what is deferred maintenance and how it relates to our system, and finally our recommended solution. As you can see, we're a very large organization, about 18 million gross square feet of space, which represents about half of all the state-owned facilities. And it's worth about $3 billion in current replacement value. And we also touch the lives of about 100,000 students per year. We can compare ourselves in size to the rest of the state's facilities, but in fact, we're more structured like seven cities with the buildings, roads, and infrastructure that supports it. And we operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In the 60s and 70s, it was a huge growth period for all of higher education. Half of our space was constructed within a 15-year window. Now, 25 to 40 years later, the major subsystems in those buildings, the heating, the electrical, and the plumbing, are simply worn out and require simultaneous overhaul. You can see in this slide the wave of construction that occurred during the 1960 to 1975 period. This huge amount of growth was in response to the baby boomers entering college. As building components began to fail, we needed to know just how extensive the problem was, so we conducted a study. You have the 2001 update of that before you now. It's this blue report here. Each education and general building, those are the classrooms and libraries and labs and those types of structures, were surveyed throughout our seven campuses, and we identified $500 million of backlogged capital repair projects. The study was based on a model that examined 11 major subsystems in each of the buildings. Eight of them are essential, and I refer to them as showstoppers when one of those fails. And three are non-core systems dealing with interior finishes. To assess the condition of our buildings, the model looked at two things. One, the statistical lifespan of each subsystem versus its actual age. And that identified the systems which were candidates for replacement. And two, the actual conditions of the subsystems were verified by going out and inspecting them. And that's the key to the study, because we don't want to simply replace items because of some statistical average says it's time to replace it. And on the other hand, if a subsystem is failing prematurely because of maintenance or use, then that system needs to be added to the list also. But the bottom line is that the systems that are identified in this report are there for a reason. It's because they're worn out. So now we can identify by campus, by building, by subsystem, exactly what needs replaced. When a subsystem is replaced on a timely basis, we call that capital repair. Delays in capital repairs are called deferred maintenance. So why were these repairs not done? Well, public institutions have been especially hard hit over the last two decades because of declining economies with concurrent budget reductions and a time when enrollments have been soaring. Also, we've been unable to convince our governing bodies of the magnitude of the problem. The investment the state has made in all these buildings is now in jeopardy, not from a lack of maintenance, but from limited funding to replace worn-out parts of buildings. The difficulty we face in talking about the problem is that, for the most part, our campuses look pretty good on the exterior. When you drive through any of our campuses, they do look remarkably well. Unfortunately, beauty is only skin deep in these buildings. This graph highlights the building systems that are in need of replacement. As you can see, over 70% of the $500 million backlog is related to HVAC, electrical, and plumbing. And these are the showstoppers, which I referred to earlier, all of which are found inside walls or hidden behind mechanical doors. An example of a recent showstopper occurred on the PSU campus when a switch shorted out due to a water leak and turned on a pump which flooded a mechanical room which serves electricity, steam, and chilled water to five other buildings. Bad things happen when you mix water and 13,000 volts of electricity. We lost a transformer, motors, controls, totaling $300,000. I use this example on a website that I've created to demonstrate some of the problems that we face every day. And I would like to share that with you right now. So this is my deferred maintenance mechanical room that shows that half of our buildings were constructed between 1960 and 75, and our buildings are made up of 11 major subsystems, and each subsystem has a lifespan. And that the subsystems constructed in the 60s and 70s are at the end of their life cycle and need replacement. And recent studies estimate the backlog to be $500 million.
Creative.
So that was our showstopper. That happened in October of 2001. Taking down five buildings with it. Here's the distribution of the backlog between the campuses. Generally, they're related to the amount of square foot of education and general buildings that each campus has in their inventory. You notice PSU's percentage is a little bit higher per square foot due to the fact that they've inherited quite a few buildings that were already in poor condition. Lincoln Hall is pictured in the background as a good example of an inherited building. This is the former Lincoln High School that was built in 1911. The city of Portland was going to demolish this building in 1949, but transferred it to PSU for use as a classroom and performing arts center. This is the geographical view of the total backlog, which shows the funding we need to spend throughout the state.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if we may, to make this even more real, if I could invite six of our presidents to give you each a very brief word on what this bill means to each of their campuses. I'd like to call up Presidents Bernstein from Portland State, White from Oregon State, and Zinsser from Southern Oregon University. Sure. And they'll be followed by President Kahn from Western, President Dow from Oregon Institute of Technology, and Vice President Williams from the University of Oregon.
Senator Morissette has a question before you leave.
Chancellor Jarvis, I understand. I realize that you don't have the long experience with the system.
Sure.
But and maybe Grant should come up and answer this question also, because Grant has been with the system since he was just a young guy, right, Grant? Okay. I guess my problem is with the whole capital repair versus deferred maintenance is there a mission statement, a principle that the Office of the Chancellor over time has adopted concerning deferred maintenance or capital repair as opposed to deferred maintenance? I mean, what I'm concerned about is the overriding principle. And so you get a bond to fix the things now. Does that mean you're going to wait until they get so bad we have to have another bond? All right. So I'd like to hear that.
Chair, sorry, Senator Morissette. In the study, we've also, let me get back to my next slide here. The study also estimated
up on the screen.
You put that back on the screen. Looks great here.
Yeah. Oops. Let me just turn it on. Mr. Chairman, let me jump in there and assist Bob for the record. Greg and Karen, Director of Government Relations, Oregon University System. The answer is yes. The State Board has adopted rules and has management principles which would require us to continue to make sure that those things that are in capital repair are repaired and do not fall into the deferred maintenance category, and we try to do that. I can say without contributing, as Bob said, the problem of having us brought to the governing bodies who manage our budget, we have done that faithfully over the last seven biennia, but have not been recognized in our budget as presented by the governor of the legislature. And so the request has been made, but by virtue of 91 because of Measure 5, 93 because of Measure 95, 97, 99, now we've got 2001 where we had a downturn, 2003, again a downturn, we continue to make the request of on the order of $40 million per year, and it is zeroed out in each budget. So we have not been able to get the resources to do it. Obviously, we could have accomplished that had we driven thousands of more students out of the system and used those funds to correct the problems, but we had fine buildings that were thinly populated. And as the Chancellor said, we did put students over the buildings during those lean years and without recognition in our budget of the funding requirement.
Okay. I appreciate Grant Cairns for a variety of reasons. He was a student of the U of O. He was the Speaker of the House. He's had a long history with this. He's been with the Chancellor's office now for quite a while, and I do appreciate his long history and insights into. So, Grant, when you were the Speaker of the House, did you do a better job than we are now doing?
No, Mr. Chairman, not at all. Not at all. And I'll tell you why. I never had a challenge like the ones you're facing here.
Oh, but with education, though, I mean.
With education, equally as good, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. But not adequate, though, right?
Equally as good.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, the invited testimony, come forward, please.
Chairman Starr, Senator Morissette, Senator Ferrioli, thank you very much for the opportunity to bring a few comments from Southern Oregon University illustrating what this is all about. And Southern Oregon University under this program would be looking at a roughly $25 million over 10 years. And our principal interest in this is to protect the safety and the quality of education and the access to education for our students. And because we are seeing a tremendous increase in applications this year over last, we're looking to more students. We want to serve them. We want to serve them in environments that are safe and high quality and that are also meeting industry standards before they go out into the workplace. So students come first in the value behind this, but important as well, of course, is protecting our assets on the campus and providing efficient ways of doing that, which we think this program over a 10-year period, rather than trying to chip away at it each year with our requests, to look at a 10-year program in a long-term view will allow us to be able to take a whole building out of service for a time, renovate and bring up the code and up to standard that particular facility, and then move on to another project, as opposed to moving forward in somewhat of a piecemeal fashion, which is what we have done over previous years. I would like to comment on just a few of the priorities on the Southern Oregon University campus, again, as an illustration. Our top priority would be a facility called Central Hall, which was built in 1950, which houses our School of Business and also our departments of English and Math. And another would be our Britt Hall, which is a building that was constructed in 1936, and it services students through a number of the student service operations and some of our departments, such as communications. A third is our McNeil Pavilion, which educates students in health and in physical education and also handles our intercollegiate athletic programs. And a fourth is Churchill Hall, of course, our administration building and also a student services facility. All of these facilities have serious problems of the sort that you've already heard our colleagues present. Electrical systems being very antiquated, galvanized piping that are rusting out, producing very unsavory water, among other kinds of problems, and issues of safety such as not having the sprinkling systems in those facilities. We do have fire alarms, I must add, but we do not have the sprinkling systems in these facilities. So those are just some of the illustrations. And finally, I would say that one of the great benefits, side benefits of all of this, is that it produces some opportunities for jobs in the economy of Southern Oregon. We have calculated it to estimate approximately 37 to 40 new jobs would be added annually through just these projects alone on our campus and around our community, not to mention the jobs that would be put into play in doing the work itself. And the other measure of that would be to look at the additional income generated to the community based upon the infusion of $25 million over a 10-year period, and that's estimated at about $60 million. So in short, this is most helpful to students in the quality and access of their education. It is helpful in protecting the assets that we have on our campus, and it is very, very helpful in stimulating the economy through the development of our campus. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Please.
Chairman Starr, Senator Morissette, and Ferrioli. For the record, I'm Tim White, the president of Oregon State University. And most of the attention in this Capitol this week has been focused on dealing with the immediate needs of our great state. We're also stewards of the future, and I think that's the context in which we appear in front of you today. And as you know, Oregon universities have the abilities to generate jobs based on the knowledge it produces, the instruction it provides, and the outreach to the compelling needs of society. And so while we're talking about the infrastructures of buildings, we in fact are talking about essential elements that lead to not only the economic strength of our state, but also the social and civic and environmental fabric. We can't continue to provide high-level jobs on our campuses or produce graduates who will then enter high-level jobs in the state of Oregon and the taxes that they pay with facilities that are continuing to degrade, as you have heard. If we don't take steps today to start fixing these problems for tomorrow, then they will become tomorrow's disasters. Oregon State University, as you know, is about 19,000 students in Corvallis. We have a 423-acre campus, and we lead the list in deferred maintenance, as you see on this overhead, of about a little less than $160 million. It's not because we've been poor stewards of our campus, but we are the largest campus in the system and among the oldest. And the problem isn't getting any better, it's getting worse. And if you take our deferred maintenance, we recognize that it's growing today at an annual rate of about $10 million. So this is $30,000 a day, $20 a minute. So I'm about $40 into telling you about our problem. We have a 114-year history of buildings, the oldest being constructed in 1889, and so these two builds will help address the needs for the future. Our highest priority is to address problems that could potentially threaten life and or safety of the building inhabitants. Education Hall, $14 million. When you come to our campus and come to the main entrance, you'll find a glorious building that is enshrouded in chain link fence. The chain link fence has been painted white so it doesn't stand out as much against the gray rock. But this is there because the rock is not attached to the building. When it was rehabbed in the 40s from a fire, they forgot to connect the stone to the building itself. So not only is that chain link fence circling this building, there's also a fence about 30 feet away from the base of the building, so you can't get close to it in case something slips through. And finally, there's plywood entrances, alcoves over the front and back entrance, that in case those safety nets don't work, as you go into and out of this building, you wouldn't get hit by a falling stone. It's an embarrassment. It's the front door of the university. It's a marvelous building. It's 100 years old, and it needs, obviously, some help on its outside as well as some help on its inside. Strand Ag Hall is another example for $9 million. Constructed in 1909, it too is facing issues around fundamental issues of electricity, water, safety, access to its upper levels for students with disability. It supports agricultural sciences, supports oceanic and atmospheric sciences. We can't do data transfers to and from that building because of the infrastructure. We have about $27 million in infrastructures and a variety of other buildings on campus. Just simple stuff that no donor would ever say is a naming opportunity to name the sewer or the drainage or the water in some of these buildings. If it was, we would approach it that way. But many of these, the sewer system, for example, was built in the 1920s. Our heating plant requires $20 million in upgrades. It was built in 1924 and is literally held together by duct tape, galvanized steel, and probably some bubble gum in different areas. So when these things go, obviously our research and instructional programs would stop. And when President Bernstein presents you some evidence from Portland State University, I know that you will view that as being evidence that could come from any one of our campuses. So I wrote a letter last week to the Senate Education Committee. You have copies that talks about the importance of this. Again, come back to the full circle that what we're really about is the development of students and research and knowledge, which feeds the state in so many different ways. You know, we're focused on bricks and mortar in our conversations. I encourage your favorable support because it really is about the very fabric of the state of Oregon.
Good afternoon, Chair Starr, members of the committee. My name is Dan Bernstein. I'm the president of Portland State University. Attached to my formal statement are some pictures of some of the areas on campus. I might add that these aren't color copies, but instead they're from a color printer. But they do illustrate some of the leaky roofs, the condition of some of our heating and air conditioning systems on campus. I also brought along some visual aids, and these are some pipes that are in our science building complex. And our science building complex actually houses some of the most sophisticated microscopes in the Pacific Northwest. But at the same time, when you go behind the actual lab itself and look at the infrastructure, this is what is holding it together. There's currently about $138 million worth of deferred maintenance on the PSU campus. We are the largest campus in the state. We currently have about 23,000 students on our campus. While we are one of the newer campuses, when you look at our facilities, many of our facilities have been inherited when PSU moved downtown. Lincoln Hall was built in 1912. Shattuck Hall was built in 1916. Moreover, our campus is probably the most highly utilized campus in the system as a result of the nature of our student body. We run classes 5 days a week from 7:30 in the morning until about 10:30 in the evening, and we also have classes on the weekends as well. So our facilities are being highly utilized. At the same time, the infrastructure as a result of deferred maintenance is reflected in these pipes as well as the photos that I presented in my formal statement. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions of the... Thank you very much.
Well, let me ask you, if you don't mind. What's the future expansion or the future needs of PSU, your school? What do you...
Well, Chair Starr, Senator Morris, at PSU, as I said before, we're currently at 23,000 students. We expect to expand to about 35,000 students by 2010, and so there's certainly the potential for continued growth and further stress on our facilities, and so it's critical that we begin to address some of these maintenance issues.
But may I? Your campus is probably the most expensive in terms of expansion and so on. I mean, do you have a parking structure at least? Parking structures?
Yes.
Do you plan to add parking structures? Although a lot of your students will come, I guess, by alternative transportation, right?
Chair Starr, Senator Morissette. Yes, we. You know, the parking is limited, or the number of parking spaces is limited, really, by the city of Portland, and so our ability to just add parking is fairly limited. We are the largest transit stop in the metro system. As you know, the streetcar. The new streetcar passes right through our urban and public affairs building, and so a lot of our students, and through subsidization, a lot of our students use the public transportation system. And so while we expect that there will be further expansion in what we call the formal university district, we also are looking at collaborations and partnerships with the community colleges in the region as a way of also offering programs.
I guess getting back, if I may, to my original question, do you have a portion of your budget that is used for ongoing maintenance? And
Chair Starr, Senator Moore said, in a sense that we do, and I think probably that's true of each of our campuses, but as we have each experienced significant budget cuts and shortfalls, we have taken funds that normally would be used for maintenance, deferred maintenance, in order provide access to programs, to academic programs. So we've, in many ways, sacrificed, maintaining the campus in favor of access and maintaining access to academic programs. I think that would be true of most of our campuses.
Well, and I guess this is one of the questions that I think has to be dealt with on an ongoing basis. At what point do you say we can't afford to continue to add because we must continue to maintain? Now, if you do the bond issues on a regular basis, then it's going to catch up with you at some point. And so I guess that is, at some point you're going to have to say, hey, we just can't afford to grow because we can't maintain what we have. You know, that's a decision point.
Yes.
Chairman Starr and Senator Morissette, I'd appreciate making a comment on this as well. I think it would be fair to say that for most, if not all of us, our challenges with our annual operating budgets have really been to try to slow the progression of deferred maintenance rather than sufficient funding to be able to, in fact, go backward and try to bring it up. We need special funding in order to do that, and that's what this measure is about. And when we have major new projects, many of those projects are both renewal and new, such as the library project where the current facilities being significantly renovated and then expansion as well. And that does deal with deferred maintenance, obviously, in the course of carrying out that major project. But these projects, in this project, in this endeavor, are all of those that have had deferred maintenance issues over the years, and those deferred maintenance issues have simply compounded over time because the operating budgets have not been sufficient to do anything but just simply slow the process.
Chairman Starr, Senator Morissette, if I might, at Oregon State, our total facilities budget is, and I won't be precise with my numbers, but I'll be close enough to be honest with you, is around $15 or $16 million a year is what we spend for our plant operations. And of that, about a $1 to $1.5 million is used for what you would call sort of preventive maintenance and repairs. So when you consider that we're accumulating problems at $10 million a year, we can only address them at sort of $1 million a year. You see why we're way out of balance. It's not sustainable. It's something you can't make up with on quantity. And so I think these bonds then allow us to get caught up, get even, get sustainable again. And then as we grow our budgets on the campuses and in the system, we can be mindful of maintaining it in the future. But we've really gotten so far behind because of this last 12 years that it's not fixable without that when you do the math.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Senator Ferrioli?
No.
Thank you. And
thank you.
Three more. We got Philip Kahn, Martha Dow, Dan Williams.
There he is. Dan.
Thank you, Chairman Starr and Senators. Western Oregon University is pleased that it's the oldest campus in the Oregon University system, but with those stately old buildings come some special problems we have, particularly with buildings that were built in the early 1900s. We, of course, are like the other institutions in that, by and large, our problems relate to electrical distribution, and the systems in the older buildings were redone in the 40s and 50s, but are now antiquated again. We also have tremendous need in changing our plumbing in the older buildings, the replacement of galvanized piping, and the replacement of HVAC systems is increasingly critical. We stand to gain $19 million with this initiative, and it will actually redo plumbing and electrical distribution in the majority of our buildings. I'll just mention a couple of buildings today to give you a snapshot. I won't mention all of them. But we have many buildings that are converted from dormitory space to classroom and office space. A notable example is Todd Hall, which was built in 1912. And it was a women's dormitory for many, many years, but is now a home of our psychology department, one of our largest departments and growing. Our teaching research component, which is well known and houses some 50 faculty members who are funded through federal grants and are in their national studies program. The problem with Todd Hall is while it is a four-floor structure, it has no elevator whatsoever, and therefore is not ADA compliant. We have to arrange for students who need to meet with various faculty members. We have to make arrangements if they cannot use the staircase for those meetings to be held wherever it might work. What we have basically in that configuration, as you might imagine, is old dorm rooms. So each room has one electrical outlet, which is quite inadequate for the type of computer use and other modern electronic use which we need. We have old cast iron radiators as the heating system, which does not distribute heat properly and makes the building inefficient in a variety of ways. The other building I will mention is what was built as the Monmouth Elementary School in 1915. Now, what's interesting about this building is while it was built as a grade school, it is now the home of our instructional technology program, which means it is to represent the cutting edge in using modern technology, computer systems, and indeed training faculty members to make use of those systems. Here again, we are using an electrical system that was put in the building in the 40s and 50s, which is totally inadequate. We do not have proper sprinkling systems, and access is, again, a complication in this building. I won't bother to mention the others, but I will merely say that what we're trying to do with the monies we would gain from this initiative is to make buildings that we enjoy in terms of the heritage and in terms of their stately nature, we're trying to make them useful for the decades ahead, and we feel that with this money we can convert them for modern use and serve our students in a much better way. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chairman Starr and members of the committee, my name is Dan Williams. I'm the Vice President for Administration at the University of Oregon. Our problems are no different than the ones that others have described. We are having the same kind of experiences. We have about $500 million in replacement value in our facilities. Were we to meet industry standards, we'd be spending about $10 million a year on deferred maintenance. Instead of that, we have in recent history been spending on the average about $3 million a year rather than 10. So therefore, our current deferred maintenance backlog is running around $150 million now. And it's growing at the rate of $11 million a year, so we're certainly losing ground. For purposes of illustration, let me simply say that our top priorities would involve the repair and replacement of some major components in our utility system to make it safer and to give us the opportunity to take greater advantage of energy-saving processes. We need to repair and replace the leaking and damaging air handling system in one of our academic buildings. And in one of our science buildings, we are still wrestling with the problems that come from having had no changes or improvements in the initial installation of utilities and air handling systems in 1950. So I would hope that you would see the use of these bonds more as a matter of as an investment rather than as a cost if we're going to preserve what's a very significant state asset. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Starr, Senator Ferrioli, and Senator Morissette, thank you for the opportunity. For the record, I'm Martin Dow, President of Oregon Institute of Technology. I'm batting cleanup, so this will be somewhat redundant, but I'll be quite specific about OIT. Our share of this bonding initiative will be about $17 million. We have three priorities in front of you today. One would be a building called Cornett Hall, which has about 80,000 square feet, one of the largest footprint buildings that the state owns. This building has evolved from a diesel technology building at the beginning of the time that we built all of our buildings in the 60s until today, where that building houses our health technologies, some of those programs, as well as our engineering programs. We are talking about maintenance of a building that has been in transition, but a lot of space available to do that. But it has HVAC problems and electrical problems in order to make that a productive building. We've been very efficient in using it as it is, but when you walk into our anatomy labs, you smell diesel, and we have HVAC problems and fans that run very loudly, you know, which certainly does not produce optimum learning conditions. That building can be maintained and improved. So I see this really as an improvement from a point in time that it was 30 years old till now. We have not been able to improve it at the level we need to. Another situation, I think, on our campus is our library, which we call the Learning Resources Center. All of our buildings, again, were built in the 60s. They're about the same years of age. And in that building, too, now we have doors and even windows, floors, and infrastructure that need improvement. A few years ago, you might have remembered the earthquake that hit Klamath Falls, and we have done some improvements with some federal money as well as state money, but there is still improvements that need to be made. In fact, our accrediting association is requiring us to do some modernization and some improvement in the library in order to sustain our accreditation. We have, you know, a major focus in engineering, technology, and health. And we could take in twice as many students to produce an improved workforce in healthcare if we can make some classroom improvements. We have a dental hygiene program very oversubscribed. The facility has not been improved again for 30 years, and we are now capped out in enrollment because of inability to maximize that facility due to improvement opportunities. So we want very much to serve the state of Oregon in providing access and quality. And we would be very appreciative of your support of this Senate bill in order to facilitate that. Thank you very much.
Question?
Well, I really appreciate the testimony because, you know, I'm hearing ADA, I'm hearing earthquake proofing, I'm hearing wiring, plumbing, all of the kinds of things that happen over time that you really can't deal with sometimes unless you do the whole building, you know, and so I can understand how some of this maintenance just can't happen until you do it in a cost-effective way, which is to do an overhaul. And then, you know, the lack of space for, you know, classes that are oversubscribed and that we have a need for in the state of Oregon, and the opportunity for people to get an education here without having to leave the state to go somewhere else. So I really appreciate your being here because I'm a believer. So thank you very much for your testimony.
Compelling. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. And now we have a couple of. We're gonna switch back to the
finish out.
Yeah. All right. Then we have two other witnesses that are signed up with this. Very good.
Can you do that? Projector warms up again.
Kevin's gonna be back, right?
Yes. Control momentarily.
We're gonna move.
Yes.
Again, Chair Starr and Senator Morissette, Bob Simonton again from Oregon University System. I wanted to get back to your earlier question about will this happen again? How are we looking into the future to resolve this problem? The graph I have before you looks ahead 50 years based on the buildings that have been constructed. This is the picture of our capital repair needs up to year 2051. And you can see the average is about $40 million per year of funds that are required just to keep the backlog from increasing greater than what it is now. And the gray shaded area is what we're currently funded at. And I projected that also based on the current funding we receive now to roughly $12 million per year. So you can see the large gap between what is funded and what is required. So we will continue to have this problem in the future, and we will also continue to request the appropriate funds to avoid this similar problem.
Mr. Chairman, again, for the record, Grattan Karen is Director of Government Relations to the Oregon University System, and that brings us to what is the solution with Senate Bill 240 and its companion measure. We're suggesting a fairly conservative and straightforward process addressing many of the questions which Senator Morissette has identified in the earlier testimony. So $500 million general fund bond authority to eliminate the existing capital backlog of repairs. It is one time. It is limited by dollar. It sunsets in 10 years so that during that 10-year period you sell those $500 million in bonds, and the companion measure, Senate Joint Resolution 1, sunsets when the last bond is retired so that it is not simply an opening to say that we will continually to use this process to do this, but rather have a one-time catch-up, and that it has got to go to the voters for their approval. As you can see on the next page, $500 million, a lot of money in anybody's language, but our total Article 11G bonding capacity is at $2.2 billion, of which we're now using only $117.6 million. That's entire outstanding Article 11G debt that presently represents 2.85% of the general fund budget. So that's very low in terms of debt to operating budget. Now, as I said, it's a fairly conservative measure because while it's before you now and will address the problems in the future, it is constructed in such a way that no debt service and thus no general fund obligation would occur in the 2003-2005 biennium. It would require a small, probably around $3 million, I think, in the 2005-2007 biennium, $3 to $6 million, somewhere in that neighborhood, which will be a fairly small amount of money. All of that debt service is attributed to our budget, of course, and as our budget is approved today, all of the outstanding debt service is attributed to us now. So this would be no different. It would not be a charge against the general fund to be distributed to other agencies. It would be a responsibility of this agency. The governance of it is, as I say, very straightforward. And also limited by the structures that you have in place in order to manage the debt that we sell into the market and thus the maintenance of our high credit rating in the market. The taxpayers must approve the measure. The issuance of the bonds are regulated in each biennium by the existing bond budget law, which says of all of the debt service we and other agencies would be permitted to sell, how much of that may be sold. The total amount, as I said, is $500 million, and then it sunsets. Let me stop there and mention something that's been addressed. How are we going to keep this from happening in the future? Quite frankly, we've organized it in a very conservative fashion to address the existing backlog. And then we are going to come to you in future biennia and ask the governor, this governor and whoever succeeds him as time goes on, to make sure that our capital and operating budgets are in balance biennium to biennium to biennium so that jointly we don't bring ourselves to this condition again. The $500 million bond measure at the peak would provide us with a debt service of $38 million a year. We hope that in 12 to 14 years from now, that's six or seven biennia ahead, the budgets will have grown, the state will have grown, the resource will have grown, and that as a share of our general fund budget will be, if not 3%, well within the 6% level that we're talking about as a national average. So we've constructed it in a way that provides you and the governor with oversight. It's limited by the vote of the people, addresses only the outstanding problem, and then we will return in future and say, let us treat this in a biennium process so that the divert maintenance is, preventive maintenance is paid for, capital repair is accomplished, deferred maintenance does not occur, and we run both those budgets in balance. That would be our objective.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Grant, I have to confess my ignorance about the budget that you present to the state. Now, do you have, first of all, do you have an amount in there, I'm sure you do, for maintenance? As you present the budget,
Mr. Chairman, we do, and we have, and one of the slides we've seen and I think you've got another slide there that you can pull up. That is the rub. We have a set amount, about $12.5 million, of general fund, which has been grown only by a few hundreds of thousands of dollars in the last 12 years.
Okay.
It matches Article 11G bonds. So each biennium, we have a total of $25 million or $12.5 million a year. That's $12.5 million a year to take care of code work, which includes all of the things that we have to deal with. It is preventive maintenance, routine maintenance repair, emergency repairs, and then all comes out of the operating funds. And then the capital fund side, all the code and safety, capital repair, and deferred maintenance and program-related improvements. Well, when you look at the bottom line and you hear the testimony you've just heard, no offense to any governor or any present or past legislator, the budget came forward, the request was made for sums far greater than $12.5 million, and okay, just zeroed out. You return 2 years later and you say, this is a problem, we need a much larger number, it's zeroed out. You come back,
4, 6, 8, 10 now, 12 years later, and again zeroed out. And I know why. The budget before you is under such, I've never seen such pressure. But our pledge to you is in the future we will come back, and it must, between us, be addressed as capital and operating imbalance, and not allow this one to go down so that some future legislature and system has to come back and say, you know, we fixed this once, but between us we didn't prepare for the next one, so we're now asking you for $750 million. That would be a failure.
Now, may I ask you?
Yes.
Okay, tell me again about the bond repayments.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Morissette, they're just like any other of the state general obligation bonds that be issued. This first sale would be January of 2005.
Well, my question is, in terms of that's going to be figured into your budget, then, is what you said.
Mr. Right? Chairman and Senator Morissette, yes. Each agency's bonded debt is attributed to their budget.
That's okay. Correct. And so, under the best of all possible scenarios, you will receive enough money each biennium to take care of everything, right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morissette, that is our hope. But at any rate, in any event, the debt will be attributed to our budget, just as...
Okay, good. And I really appreciate this explanation because I'm... You know, now that we've got rid of term limits, maybe some of us will be here long enough to establish some institutional memory, so when these things keep coming back to us, we will have something to refer to. But I do appreciate the information you've given me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there's one last slide which simply says, why now? I think we've explained that to you, but there are other elements. The bond market is in a favorable place for us today, next year, the year after. We do not expect to see the kind of interest rates we had 10 or 12 years ago. These are 5,000 family wage jobs to be created in 7 regions of the state, and as you'll hear from witnesses to follow, then a very favorable contracting market. And thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Jessica Harris and Bob Shipwright.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jessica Harris. I'm here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. The companies I represent build the infrastructure at the Oregon University System and at institutions throughout the state of Oregon. We're here today in support of these measures because we believe two things. One, these jobs, these projects will put our folks back to work. The construction industry in the state of Oregon is out of work, only second to the manufacturing sector. Our companies have been the hardest hit because we are a bellwether industry. When the economy goes down, we lose work. I have companies that are saying, you know, I've got as much work on my shelf as I'm doing right now, and I don't see anything coming behind it. And if it weren't for public work in the marketplace, I wouldn't be in business at all. These jobs, these projects will keep us working and will keep businesses that have been passed down generation to generation in business in the state of Oregon. It will keep the employees that Bob Shipwright represents to work too. And this is an important time for our industry. These are good measures that will keep us working. The second and equally as important piece from AGC's perspective is once you build something, it's incumbent upon you to take care of it. And maintaining your infrastructure is the cheapest way to ensure you don't have to go back and replace it all. We've seen, on a related issue, transportation system that we haven't maintained over the past decades, and it's falling apart, and it's more expensive to replace than it is to maintain it. Similar with the university system that represents half of the state's assets. If we don't repair and maintain it now, and we have to replace it all later, it's at a much bigger expense than investing what we need to invest now to catch up on maintenance so we don't have to tear it all down and start over. We believe that this is fiscally responsible and it comes at a good time for both our industry and for the state of Oregon as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you. Question?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bob Shiprack, here today representing the Oregon Building and Construction Trades Council. I wanted to voice our support as well for these two measures. Jessica touched on it. We're running about 25% unemployment right now and growing. It's not getting better. And we see this as it's one of the two nice bills that are in the building this session, I guess. The rest of this stuff is so bad. I also wanted to comment on what Jessica said, and I actually go out on the campuses occasionally. I go to Oregon State University once a year to talk to their engineering classes, and I visit Portland State on business, and a little disagreement. I think the outsides of many of their buildings are pretty bad, too. I know it, Corvallis, I wouldn't walk along the edge of some of those old brick buildings. Seriously, I mean, they're ready to fall out. And she's also right. I mean, to not maintain these public works is really, we're derelict in our duty if we're not going to maintain these buildings. I mean, that is very short-sighted. I look at these as just like any individual. They're going to take out a loan to fix their house. We all do it. That's what these folks are asking for. They want to take out a loan to fix their buildings. The last thing I would say, and I want to comment because I've followed this. Grattan and I worked on this several years ago. The university system also has a rather unique method of constructing their facilities and maintaining them, and that they have the flexibility to really look at the best, most qualified people. And when you're talking about remodeling old buildings, it's kind of a specialized thing. So my point of all this is that I think the money will be well spent, in that it'll be done well, and they have the flexibility to get into some alternative types of contracting, such as design build, where they take a good qualified contractor that actually can work with them to design and construct the facility, saving the taxpayers a lot of money, and you're getting a better job. So I just wanted to bring that up to the committee too, because if there are questions about this, the university system is uniquely situated to see that the money is spent in the best fashion possible. So I think it's all the way around, it works. It's a good thing. We would support that, and I'll be quiet. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, if there are no more witnesses?
Yes.
One last thing for the record. Grant and Karen, Director of Government Relations. Again, I wanted to report to the committee that we have reviewed these measures with the treasurer and his director of debt management. They are approval. They have given their approval to the measures. Think they are prudent and they are worthwhile. And looking forward to the sale. We are working with the treasury on some technical amendments, which, if you advance the bills today to Ways and Means, we will work with them on to get them to, so that the bills will be in proper form and match the language in their most recent general obligation bond constitutional amendments. That would be the OHSU measures was adopted a year ago and the seismic safety measures that were adopted in November. They want exact parallel language, which these weren't drafted exactly to their specifications. We've agreed that we will follow the bills to Ways and Means if they move today and get those amendments to their approval and address them there.
Thank you, Grattan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your patience and time.
All right. We're going to close the public hearing, Senate Bill 240. And understanding that these are companion bills, we're going to chairs.
Probably going to need separate motions on them.
I understand.
Mr. Chairman, procedural question.
Yes, sir.
Do you want a motion to have one of these bills moved to Ways and Means and the other to the floor for approval?
No, sir.
No, you want them both to go to the floor.
go to Ways and Means.
Both go to Ways and Means.
That's correct.
Separate motions.
Separate motions. Both go to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Strobel.
Work session on Senate Bill 240. Chair would entertain a motion to move Senate Bill 240 to Ways and Means.
So move.
Senator Morissette has moved Senate Bill 240 to Ways and Means.
With the due pass recommendation?
With the due pass recommendation? Yes, okay. Due pass recommendation. Very good. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Senator Farrelly?
Aye.
Chair
Scott? Aye. Senator Deckert is excused, and we have passed unanimously Senate Bill 240, Ways and Means, with a due pass recommendation. Close the work session on 240, open the work session on SJR 1.
Mr. Chair, I would move SJR 1 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morissette has moved Senate Joint Resolution 1 to Ways and Means with a due pass resolution. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Senator Farrelly?
Aye.
Chair Scott?
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, SJR 1 has moved to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Thank you all very much. You've been very helpful and attentive and very compelling testimony. With that, we close the work session on SJR 1 and adjourn Senate Education Committee.
So go forth and do good.